This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. Jeff Phelps here. Andy Baskin over there. We talked earlier on in the show about The Last Dance, the 10-part Michael Jordan documentary that just finished airing on ESPN. And with that in mind, along with the thoughts of the NBA perhaps returning this year, we go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, where a good friend of the show joins us right now, Joe Prunty, former Cavaliers assistant coach, former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, longtime NBA assistant, a guy who watched Michael Jordan torment his teams early on in Joe's career. Joe, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be on with you guys. Always fun to talk hoops.
How's the family? Everybody doing okay?
Yeah, everybody's doing really well. And, school's winding down here, so everybody's excited.
And as a homeschool teacher, you are what?
getting questioned as to how good I am at teaching second grade. My daughter loves me dearly, but I think she wants to transfer.
I bet she does. Did you watch the Jordan documentary, Joe?
So I have been watching it, yes, but unfortunately I was not able to see all of last night. So I have it recorded, so don't spoil the ending for me.
Yeah.
We'll try not to. Just put your money on the Bulls,
though. That he won and they retired. You saw him from a different perspective than the rest of us, and later, it was later in his playing career when you joined the San Antonio Spurs. What did, from a coaching standpoint and from an organizational standpoint, looking at him as an opponent, what was the general thinking back then?
How well you need to be prepared. And not that that's any different from any opponent, but, the challenge of going up against him, not only in an environment of an NBA game, but in the added environment of what it's like when he enters your arena. So maybe the best context I could put that in, we played in the Alamo Dome when I first got to San Antonio, and on a given night you could have as many as 20,000, which would be, a normal sellout for a lot of teams, our upper teams, of course, 18,000, 19,000. When he came to town, or I should say when the Bulls came to town, the first year that I was in San Antonio in the 96-97 season, there's 37,000 fans at the game.
Wow.
And it's just a different environment because the noise is louder. Everybody talks about the Alamo Dome being so cavernous, so big, which of course it is. But the curtain is now back further so more people can be in there and see it. And those were numbers when we played in the NBA Finals in 99 against New York. Those were the numbers that you saw. Other than that, you didn't see it. And this was, like I said, this was in November that we played the game against Chicago at home. And it was just other than giving you the sheer number, it's just a different atmosphere.
Joe, I'm just curious, somebody who, involved in the NBA, was there anything in there that from what you've seen so far that was kind of, you were like, wow, man, I had no idea that happened or that was going on, or did anything shocking to you?
Yeah, I don't know if anything was like overly shocking to me in regards to, there's a lot of stories that I had heard. I've been fortunate enough to be with some guys that had been on some of those teams and, you know, had spoken to them, you know, hey, what was it like? And they never got into anything that was, you know, personal in terms of, like, I think their locker room stuff, they stayed their locker room stuff. But, right. You know, some of the stories you had heard, like I had heard about, you know, the confrontations like, you know, a Steve Kerr or Will Perdue with Michael. And I don't think any of those guys ever felt anything bad about those things as much as they just told, yeah, these things happened in practice. Practices were very competitive. But I think practices, I know when I first got to San Antonio, our practices were really competitive. So I don't want to say that that totally surprised me when those guys told me those things. You know, I think the fun part for me in watching it is just seeing all the behind the scenes things. So how much time, you know, the media session is still going on post game. And it's not necessarily a playoff game. The media session is probably still going on where the media has been let into the locker room. And I'm assuming he's already in the back room, wherever that was, and he's watching TV and he's got his suit on or dressed and in his mind rehashing what's taken place. And I'm sure he was doing that because his media sessions were a little bit different in terms of the magnitude of reporters that were around him. So it was interesting to just see some of those behind the scenes things in the locker room, listen to some of the things that the guys said, but I can't think of one thing off the top of my head right now that was like, oh my gosh, that's really surprising or surprising that that had happened. You know, and maybe the whole Rodman going to Vegas sort of debate, you know, maybe that right. was sort of like, don't let one guy saying, don't let him go. The other guy saying, we're going to let him go because he needs to, you know, and it maybe, you know, something like that's pretty surprising that there's a debate on whether we're going to have a guy lead the team or not. But I think each team handles situations and not that specific, but situations like that differently.
Joe Prunty joining us, former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, longtime NBA assistant. When you came in with San Antonio and during your time with the Spurs, you had a couple of guys who led from a very different perspective than Michael Jordan in David Robinson and Tim Duncan. And I'm not sure how it plays, Joe. Michael came to tears talking about the way he felt he had to lead, you know, in one of the previous episodes and had to take a break, you know, and you heard teammates say, you know, Will Perdue, who I know you had with you, and saying this guy was a butthole. And Steve Kerr saying we were intimidated. We were afraid of this guy. And I can't imagine that people were that way about David Robinson and Tim Duncan. Were they? And the different ways of leading, is there one better than another? Or I'm not sure how that plays in the NBA.
In San Antonio, there's different types of leaders, right? I think
right.
we all know that.
Right.
But what I would say is, you know, Michael's leadership, you know, you mentioned those guys talking about how the way either they were treated or what have you, but they were all, like Bill Wennington said it, he said, well, wait a sec, we can win championships and we just got to play hard and we got to compete and push ourselves to the hardest, the nth degree, the hardest we can and achieve great things. Yeah, sign me up. So they did, you know, guys wanted to be a part of it because it's special stuff. In San Antonio, I think what we had different leaders in different areas, meaning, you know, David Robinson was sort of a spiritual leader or an exemplary leader in that you, when you walked into the locker room, you respected David, not only for his athletic abilities and the things that he did on the basketball court, but also for the things on how he conducted himself. He started a school way back when, you know, not only guys still do things like that in terms of, you know, they'll pay for college education for a class if they do a certain thing or do this. And David started his own school, and that's an amazing thing. And that's, as I said, it's just sort of that typified or exemplified how he conducted himself. And you want to follow those examples. You had Avery Johnson, who was probably our vocal leader. He was one of those guys that was an extension of the coach Pop on the floor in regards to communicating things, making sure guys were on the same page, maybe saying things in the locker room. Not that other guys didn't say things, but Avery was more the vocal leader. Tim was, came in and was extremely talented, and people knew he was at some point going to take over the organization. When that time was, it was going to be determined, but in terms of watching his work ethic and the talent and skill level that he had, he led in that way. And he evolved, too, in his leadership skills. So in San Antonio, I think we had lots of leadership in many different ways from the players.
Joe, just kind of getting back up to speed with what's happening right now. I'm just, no matter how they decide to come back or if they decide to come back, how long do you realistically think it would take a team to get ready to start playing again? What kind of a window would you need?
Yeah, that's the big question right now, and you're hearing several different answers. Some teams are saying, or some people have referenced in when I've read articles, a minimum of a couple of weeks, which obviously that's on the extremely low end, and others saying upwards of a month. The question that I would have, though, is when does that time frame start? Does that time frame start when people start going back into the facilities, meaning they're in, but they're only working out with one coach, doing one individual workout, nobody else in the gym, or if they are, they're at separate baskets? Or does that time frame start when we start looking at full practices, where guys are really going up and down competing? So I do think it's going to take certainly getting up to speed and running and conditioning and doing the things that NBA players have to do is going to take a minimum of 3 weeks, just in terms of getting your not only conditioning but your timing not only for yourself also but with your teammates. So again, it's just the question of when are we thinking that time has that time frame started for people? And I would say not really. I mean, I know not everybody's back, but it was in Cleveland. I read Kevin Love talking about going into the facility, and it was great to be back in there. But I just don't feel like that time frame has started, even though he's doing basketball activities. It'll take a little bit to get back, but the one thing is, most everybody's going to kind of be in the same situation in regards to the amount of time off.
Joe Prunty joining us, former Cavs assistant coach, longtime NBA assistant, former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. Joe, with the return of the NBA at some point, ideally, you'd like to finish this season, start the next one relatively on time, and just go play a regular normal season next year. Is it more important, do you think, to finish this season or to make sure next season goes off as close to without a hitch as possible, or some combination of those?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we want to take care of, and I know we want to get the basketball part right, I think it's just making sure we're doing the safety part first. And I think that's where the way the NBA has handled this, from Adam Silver to all the people involved in the decision-making process, because I know there has to be numerous people involved, along with all the teams and the people that have to be preparing for these things. I know everybody wants to play. Fans want to watch. Players want to play. Coaches want to coach. We all want to be involved. We do. And we've never seen that more personified now than when it's been taken away, like so many things. So I just feel like the biggest thing is trying to do everything that we want to do within the context of what we need to do as best possible, such as making sure everything is as safe as possible. And it looks like the thought process is there in regards to contingency plans. So this is what we're thinking of doing. There's been a lot of ideas floated out there. I couldn't imagine how many have, but I would imagine that people are already thinking, okay, if we get to this date, where are we? And so having said that, safety to me would be the primary concern. And I know one of the things that came out was, hey, if we start this thing, we're going to do it. Like, we're not going to start, then stop, then restart. So, again, I think the paramount thing here is just making sure that everybody that's involved feels like the circumstances are the best possible for continuing. And once that's established, then you move forward and, you know, you do the best you can.
But, Joe, before
I'm just curious.
Go ahead, Andy.
Go ahead, Jeff. Go. No, I was Joe, just going to say, I think it would be kind of fun to play a tournament if they could do it. You know, just a straight out best of threes. Let's go and go play this at a hub site. I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of different things that are going to draw fan interest. And when you now, I guess my question to you would be: is are you saying we take the top eight in the East, top eight in the West? Are you saying everybody's involved? Like
no, I think unfortunately that if you're not in now, you're just not in. And so those top eight teams would go and then. You know, go to a hub site and then go play. And I think that you could – I mean, I don't know how many different gyms they'd have to use to try to keep people separated a little bit. But, you know, as Jeff says all the time too, the more rules we have to make sure that everybody's safe, then you kind of have to question why are we going back to do this, you know. And but I do think it – like I would be really intrigued to watch not to the extent of the NCAA tournament, but I think, you know, we all kind of have that passion and love for the way the NCAA tournament plays out. And so I think you could do a little bit of that with the NBA in trying to crown a champion this year if you can get it done.
Well, that's one thing that has been mentioned at different times throughout this process. This is an opportunity to experiment with different things. One thing I think we all could say is when games start being played, it's going to be a massive television event. People are so excited for the NBA to come back. People are so excited to watch games. I think this Jordan documentary, or you know, the documentary of the Bulls, The Last Dance, has only fueled that. It gives people more desire to talk about the NBA, to see the games, to watch the playoffs and what have you. So it definitely will, whatever decisions are made, whether we're playing a few games and then starting the playoffs, which is hard if you're doing that, because one of the things that we already were at was magic numbers, right? There were certain teams that already qualified for the playoffs. So right. If you shrink the season down, well, does that eliminate everybody? Like, I think the closest team in the East to the playoffs might have been five games or more. So if there were only five games being played, well, everybody that was out is out now. And in the West, I don't know how many teams were. I think Memphis was in eighth. I don't know how close Portland, Sacramento, those teams were. But, again, what you're looking at is your opportunities to get in, the lower the amount of games are that are played, it's obviously going to shrink. So magic numbers would change, and therefore do you have a regular season. But I do think there is a desire – to play games. It's just a matter of what's the best format. And then, of course, once the playoffs start, everybody's really excited about that, because not only is it basketball, but it's the playoffs.
Joe, thank you for your time. Fingers are crossed that we can talk to you in a week or three and have some kind of a plan in place as to the return of the NBA and get your thoughts on it. Thank you, buddy.
I would love it, and I know we all would love that.
Isn't that the truth? Joe, thank you,
Thanks,
buddy.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
Joe Prunty, former Cavs assistant coach, former longtime assistant with the Spurs, Mavericks, Blazers, Nets, Phoenix Suns, Milwaukee, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.